Hey guys, welcome back to another week of Autastic, your comedian's guide to autism. I'm one of your hosts, Kirk Smith, and my co-host here,
Graham K.
Graham K. You're finally out of the Great White North, huh?
I escaped to the land of the free.
Green card approved, New York City.
I got a green card.
That's great.
I live in New York City, closer to home, which is good.
That's nice. You know?
I'm right here. I set up my little home office. I'm talking to you from the old home office.
Nice.
Yeah.
So that's great.
Pretty fantastic. Guys, I don't mean to brag, but I've been killing it on Craigslist lately. Just killing it.
Sorry, fighting a cold. I'm sorry.
I've been watching a lot of American Pickers.
Casual Encounters, or how you kill on Craigslist? Specifically, what are you doing?
That, no, not like that. Oh, boy. We should clarify. Because there was, I think, like 8 years ago, like a Craigslist killer. No, I've been doing very well on the used furniture market.
Okay, it's all coming together. I thought maybe one of our good friends, Eddie DeLaCepi, has a joke. Like, anybody on Tinder? Anybody on? Not me. I'm old school. I'm on Craigslist. Any Craigers here?
Yeah, Craigers.
Any Craigers here?
Craigers makes me laugh.
Then you got to tell your kids, hey, where'd you meet mom? I met mom on a used garage sale. No, online garage sale.
On an online garage sale.
Eddie's funny. So you get some furniture. It's great, dude. So you're enjoying New York. It's awesome.
Wait, here's the thing is like when I left LA, I sold all my new furniture that I had bought in the past 12 months on Craigslist and I took a bath on it, you know? And I said to myself, when I move to New York City, I'm going to regain my losses by swindling some other poor guy.
You're paying like forward theft? Is that what's happening?
Yeah. Going to the system. You know what I mean?
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. And I've swindled.
You swindle people left and right. That's funny. Not swindle. Listen, people have to get rid of their stuff. They're in New York City. You know how New York is. There's no room for stuff. You want to pay for storage? No. Just give it to somebody. Sell it. Get rid of it.
Yeah. No, it's, yeah. You can buy IKEA stuff for like a dollar. it's like a BMW and you drive it off the lot. It loses like all of its.
Immediately.
Anyway, that's that. My birthday's coming up, that means my brother's birthday's coming up. So there's a lot of emails going back and forth about the birthday. By the way, we should set it up. This is the Comedian's Guide to Autism.
My name is
Graham K. That's Kirk Smith. We're two comics. I have an autistic brother.
I have an autistic son.
Yeah.
It gets competitive all of a sudden.
Yeah. Mine's more autistic than yours. Well, that is true, Kirk.
I win. it's funny.
Yeah. But Kirk has an amazing son, and I have an amazing brother. Got an email this morning from Pete. It's entitled... the title is "Happy, Very Happy, Excellent Early Birthday" from your brother.
I love it.
That's the title.
It's a very specific title.
And then he talks about the fish tank cleaning. I know a couple weeks ago I talked about how I helped him clean the fish tank. Like I went to the fish because his fish tank was a murder zone for all the fish.
The killing fields.
Yeah, you buy fish and then they were just dead within 2 weeks and. I think we've got it figured out. It's been 2 weeks. None of the fish have died.
That's great. That's great. What's going on?
We got the right. We got the right schedule down. You know, like a lot of people with autism, he needs
routine.
A routine and structure. To be taught properly and structure. And my dad did a really good job of that.
That's great.
But it was like my dad set it up and I knocked it down. But I think the fish will be all right.
That's great, man. My weekend review is JJ's doing good. It's almost summer in Sweden, so he's starting to do his little summer stuff. And he's on a new, as longtime listeners know, he's got a new housing arrangement. He's got his own little place, and we're excited about that. And they've got him on a eating routine. It's much more structured where, mm-hmm. for example, he can't take his computer into the kitchen because he likes to sit there and eat and watch videos. And then you don't watch what you're eating. You just keep eating. So long story short, he's lost 12 kilograms in Sweden. So it's kilos.
What's that, like 24, 25 pounds?
Yeah. That's a lot, dude. So
that's a lot.
I'm really excited for him. I think he's right around 200, just under 200. So it's a big deal. You know, I'm probably a little over 200, maybe 205 or something. So
I got to do what he's doing.
Basically, they lock up all his electronics at dinner time. So no electronics at the table.
I'll try that.
No Craigslist at the table, Graham. No Craigslist at the table. Oh, man. I'm a Craigger.
That's great.
So yeah, he's doing good. I'm gonna post these videos too. I've got a video of him playing the bongo drums today, so nice. I'll post that today. He's on command. He jams out, but you've got to give him real specific instructions. But yeah, he's doing good. I'm looking forward to seeing him. I see him next month, so I've got those tickets ready. I'm excited. It's gonna be good.
I gotta send you this thing that I found from when I was a kid. And we can it's a picture, and we can post it on the Facebook page. And it's a picture of a handwritten note my brother left me maybe, 15 years ago. And I loved it so much that I kept it.
I love it.
And I was recently home in my parents' house, and I was like, my dad's like, clean out the basement. Clean all your crap out of the basement.
Well, you are 30.
Basically, that's when your dad's just like, throw out your childhood. Throw it out.
Well, he's Scottish.
I need room
he's
for
like,
no reason, yeah, I don't. I'm old.
He's Scottish. He just has to have room for his lack of feelings. It makes
yeah,
sense.
Yeah, exactly. I store my emotions in the basement.
Oh, that's funny.
Figuratively, Henry.
It's mostly a metaphor.
Yeah, I think it's a euphemism. I was looking through this old folder of like just random sheets that I had saved from. When I moved out when I was 20 or so, and there was a note Peter left me, and he must have made it when he was like 17, and he was really into He-Man when he was 17, like crazy, and it's just like, Graham, I've gone out to walk the dog, and we need to buy more plastic bags.
I love
it. By the power of Grayskull, He-Man. And then like a drawing of He-Man.
I love it.
It was like,
text it to me now. I'll put it on the Facebook.
I will. But anyway,
shameless plug. I last weekend I was headlining a little club of Yuck Yucks in St. John's. This weekend I am at, where am I? I'm in Halifax. Thursday sold out, but there's still tickets Friday, Saturday. And then June 15th through 17th, you can see me at the Comedy Mix in Vancouver if you're out in that area.
Yes.
I had some people message me about that.
Sweet. Yes, so Canadian fans.
Yeah,
support.
Building up a little presence up here. Should we do the interviews?
Yeah, we got this. You want to set up how special this episode is?
So this month in May, there was a special conference that Jill Escher, our roving reporter, who many of you know, she is the president of that autism organization in San Francisco. And also funds genetic research. She interviewed three neuroscientists. And now we always talk about how this is not science, and usually it's not.
Nope.
But this week, our topic du jour is the brain. So we're focused on the brain because she interviewed three people from two from the Mind Institute, and one is the new chief science officer. I can't even say it. Chief science officer at Autism Speaks.
Mm-hmm.
And so let's, without further ado, let's play these interviews.
Great.
Hey, everyone.
Jill, thank you so much for doing this. Tell us about this conference you were at and exactly what went down up there in the beautiful Bay Area of California.
Yeah, well, every year, literally thousands of autism researchers get together for the International Meeting for Autism Research. And this year it was held in our backyard up here in San Francisco.
Amazing.
So, there were stampedes of autism researchers.
How many people were? This is a big conference, right? It's a big deal.
Yeah, I would say about 2,300 people. And
wow.
These were, all kinds, geneticists, therapists, diagnosticians, epidemiologists, all kinds of walks of life related to autism research.
That's amazing. It's almost as many people as come to a Friday night football game in Texas. I love it.
Not quite as festive.
No, not quite, yeah. But close.
Or drunken.
But close. All right. Well, here are a series of interviews. Jill, thank you so much for doing this and did a great job. Thank you.
All right. You're welcome.
Jill Escher, roving reporter for Autastic. I am sitting here at a conference center in San Francisco with Dr. Thomas Avino. Say hi, Dr. Avino.
Hello, everybody.
And we're going to talk about brains, aren't we?
Yes, indeed.
You know, did you know, Dr. Avino, that autism is actually a brain condition?
I did know that. And in fact, that's what we study at the UC Davis Mind Institute. We study the actual human postmortem brain.
Postmortem, for all of you non-scientists out there, means brains taken from cadavers, people who have met their maker and have unfortunately died. And some of those people have autism. And some of those brains are donated to science, right?
Indeed. They are donated to our lab, and we take these brains, we process them using normal methods, and then we look at them under the microscope to see what types of differences we see in the autism brain versus others.
So are autism brains different from, let's say, you and me?
Indeed. Some of our most recent research has shown that the individuals with autism, their brain grows a little bit differently than other individuals like you and I.
Can you give me just maybe two examples of how some of these brains are different? I know no two brains are alike, but give me just some examples.
That's true. So we study a brain region that is very important for social and emotional development. And we have found that this brain region grows abnormally in individuals with autism.
Is it, I know you told me it was called the amygdala, but is it bigger? Is it smaller? Is it wired differently? Is it connected differently?
That's a very, very good question. And what we find with this brain region, the amygdala, is that it is actually early in life, it's too big, and later in life, it shows signs that it might be too small. So it really emphasizes how the entire lifespan is important in individuals with autism because these brain regions change over time.
What's another example? I went to a presentation yesterday where they're showing the connectivity between the hemispheres, the two parts of the brain, was underdeveloped in a lot of autism cases. Give me another example like that.
Sure, and I think that's a fantastic example. The area of the brain that connects the two hemispheres has been shown to be less well connected in individuals with autism, and certainly that relates to our research because this brain region, like we've talked about, the amygdala, is very connected with a lot of other brain regions, and that connection between brain regions also seems to be deficient in autism. So that connectional deficiency, I think, is what you're referring to.
Yes. So science is moving forward, learning about the brain and autism in many ways. And if people are interested in signing up to maybe learn more about how they can donate their loved one's brain in the event of an unfortunate situation, or if they just want to learn more about all this neuroscience, where can they go?
Sure. So our program is called Autism BrainNet, and you can visit our website, takesbrains.org. And, it's important to highlight, yes, we need brains from all types of individuals with autism, but, typical individuals as well. You know, brain donation, if our listeners are interested in learning more about the research or about how they can do it, I would encourage them to visit our program to learn more.
Okay, takesbrains.org. Well, thank you, Dr. Avino.
Thank you very much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Hey, everybody. Jill Escher, roving reporter for the Autastic Podcast here at the IMFAR International Meeting for Autism Research in San Francisco in May 2017. And I'm interviewing yet another big cheese of the autism world, Dr. David Amaral. Say hi, Dr. Amaral.
Hey, Jill. How you doing?
Great, and I'm happy to be talking to you today. So, Dr. Amaral, can you tell our Autastic audience a little bit about you?
Yeah, I'm a professor at UC Davis, the Mind Institute. The MIND stands for Medical Investigation of Neurodevelopmental Disorders, and we were started in 1998 by four families who have children with autism, and what they hoped is that we'd understand this disorder well enough so that we could start decreasing the disabilities associated with autism.
And tell us a little bit about your background. What's your research or clinical background?
Yeah, well, I'm a neuroscientist, so I used to study the brain just to try and understand how the brain works. But when these families came to UC Davis and asked us to start this institute, they really tried to get me involved in autism research, and they completely won me over. So now virtually all of the research I do is with children with autism, and particularly trying to understand how the brain develops, perhaps in a different way in people with autism, to understand what underlies some of the behavioral changes that we see in people with autism.
Let me just ask you a quick question there. So I'm not a neuroscientist. Okay. This podcast is not run by neuroscientists, but I was really wowed by the research presentations yesterday about what they call kind of functional underconnectivity mm-hmm. in autism, and obviously different in different kinds of autism, about how basically neurons aren't talking to each other quite as well. Can you comment just a little bit on that?
Yeah, so one of the important findings over the last few years is that we're seeing as early as 6 months in children who go on to have autism that the brain is developing differently. And it doesn't develop the same way in all people with autism, but we're seeing that there are alterations. The brain is larger in some children with autism, and that increased size...
My son included.
Okay, is not necessarily a good thing. It means that something about the program of how a brain develops has gone a little bit different. Part of the repercussions of that altered developmental change is that the connections between different parts of the brain is like a big city. There are different parts that communicate with each other, and no single part of the brain does any particular job. It has to work with others. And so if there's a difference in connectivity patterns, the brain may not work as typically. It might work better, it might work worse, but it doesn't work in the normal way. And we're starting to see very, very early on that there are brain changes in people with autism that might affect how they function.
Great. We were talking a little bit before about kind of treatments and what's really practical for families. I know that the Mind Institute was founded by families, obviously, like you just said, and very interested in real life, you know, day-to-day, improvements for these people and these families. So here at this huge meeting, we have 2,300 researchers or something like that. What are you learning? What do you see as really helping families in the future?
Yeah. So what's exciting is that people are paying more attention to what I would call low-hanging fruit. There are aspects of autism like anxiety, like gastrointestinal problems that many, many people with autism have mm-hmm. beyond the core symptoms, which are social impairments and things like that. And I think what the field has decided is that those are the things we should go after first, because if we can solve those problems, the quality of life of people with autism is going to be so much better and might actually make them more eligible for other kinds of treatments for the core problems. And anxiety is one that the Mind Institute is actually very, very interested in. Turns out, people with autism, it's been predicted that anywhere between 11 and maybe as much as 85% of people with autism have severe anxiety disorders. They worry about the same kinds of things that everybody else worries about, but sometimes they worry about really sort of different kinds of things.
And like, they loop, they stay on something and kind of can't get off track.
Absolutely. And this allows them, first of all, it just like everybody else, if we have these worries, it doesn't allow us to engage in social interactions and all kinds of other things. So we have been spending increasing amounts of time, and actually there were a number of presentations here at the INFAR meeting trying to determine how we can best evaluate people with autism for their anxiety problems. And once we can assess whether somebody has anxiety or not, then we can go on and treat it. So it turns out that while we don't have any medications at this point for the real core symptoms of autism, we do have lots of medications and other kinds of psychological treatments like cognitive behavior therapy, which are proving to be effective in people with autism. So those are the kinds of things that I'm really excited about, that we can start dealing with some of the medical and psychological issues that people with autism have. And we're taking those issues seriously. We're not simply saying, oh, that's just because they have autism, mm-hmm. and not doing anything further about it.
Yeah, that's super important. Thank you. Well, we have to wrap up, but I do have to say we're here in California where medical cannabis is free. And I got to tell you, a lot of families I know, that's what they're using to reduce anxiety and autism. So maybe a clinical trial in that direction someday? What do you think?
Yep, I think it's entirely likely. I mean, there are lots of treatments for autism, including medical cannabis, and I think all of them should be on the table for helping people with autism.
Yeah, whatever helps. Well, thank you. It's great to see you again, Dr. Amaral, and appreciate you contributing to Autastic.
Nice talking to you, Jill. Take care.
Hey, everyone. This is Jill Escher, roving reporter for the Autastic podcast, and I'm sitting with the brand new chief science officer for Autism Speaks, Dr. Tom Frazier. Welcome, Dr. Tom.
Welcome. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate this opportunity.
Well, great. I'm excited that you're on board with Autism Speaks now. You just started last month. You are so fresh and new. And I'm wondering if you can tell everybody about who you are. I mean, you have a personal connection to autism, which is sort of a thing here in Autastic. We all do, too. So you're one of us. So maybe you could tell us a little bit about you, and then we can talk about what you're going to do at Autism Speaks. So tell us, who are you, Dr. Tom?
Sure. So first and foremost, I'm a parent. 11 years ago, my son was diagnosed. He's 13 now. He's huge. He's like 6 foot tall. He's taller than me now. And it's very different than when he was a tiny little boy. But I'm a parent. And then, you know, after he was diagnosed, I had been in clinical psychology and research on ADHD and bipolar disorder, but obviously decided to move into autism. And so for the last 11 years, I've been working in autism. I was at the Cleveland Clinic Children's, and directed their Center for Autism there, which has a large clinical program. And we started a clinical research and translational research program.
And people here on Autastic don't know what you mean by translational research.
Sure. So translational research is where you try to take discoveries like genetic discoveries or environmental discoveries and really translate them into treatments for people.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you've been sort of on the more treatment side, on the clinical side. Yeah. And so now you are moving to Autism Speaks. And what do you see doing there with their science program?
Well, I think we have to do two things simultaneously. The first is we have to continue to discover the underlying causes of autism, you know, what drives autism in individuals that have it, either really super high-functioning people that are incredibly capable to people who have intellectual disability. We have to really understand the full spectrum. So that's one path. And then the other path we have to do at the same time is to try to test out solutions now. So things that we know already are helpful for people, but really try to maximize those. And we know that those solutions are sometimes hard to access. So
give me some examples of, like, what are things that you think would really help families now?
Well, especially for kids who have pretty more significant needs, we want to get them into early interventions, whether they be behavioral interventions like ABA-based treatments or developmental interventions, or for kids who are higher functioning, you know, social skills interventions and ways that they can learn how to take perspective and be effective in their peer relationships with other kids at school or in the neighborhood. So those kinds of interventions we know work, but we don't necessarily know how to tailor them best for each individual kid. We don't necessarily know how to help parents to understand when they should get their kid into that intervention, how long they should be in the intervention, and really just to predict how well kids are going to do so that parents can plan and how they use their money and when they access resources.
And what about for your own son, if I could ask? What would really help you as a father in your own situation in terms of, you know, real-world treatment?
Well, my son's pretty significantly affected. So for kids like him, and I mean, personally for him, what's worked is a pretty standard but intensive behavioral intervention that helps him to function, you know, helps him to learn how to do everything from sit quietly when he needs to actually, you know, engage in some basic back and forth interactions with people, how to take care of himself too, you know. So he, every day when he goes to school, he's learning right now how to shave, you know. So that's a big deal for us, mm-hmm. because he doesn't like people touching his face. Mm-hmm. So when he learns how to do stuff like that and, you know, showering and pre-vocational skills, because eventually we want him to have a job, and we know that he actually enjoys working in some mm-hmm. capacity. So these are the kind of treatments that really help us now. And at the same time, I would say that for kids who are significantly affected, we have to continue to look at ways that we can find treatments that are even more effective than the ones we have today. Mm-hmm. So,
well, I'm in your club, so I have a son, Jonathan, who is similar to your son. I don't even try to shave him. I just let him become the hairy, adorable Adonis that he is. And JJ, Kirk's son, is in your club as well. So we know your club. And yeah, anything that helps them become happier and more functional. Definitely. Do you have any last words about Autism Speaks in general and what you hope for the autism community?
Well, I think there's been a lot of contentiousness in the community, and I think most of it is unnecessary. And so
I agree. Rah, rah.
And so I think actually what we have to do is just be as inclusive as possible, understand that there are different needs across the mm-hmm. spectrum, across the lifespan. For those of us whose kids are getting older, we're really pushing on transition right now, and I think that's totally appropriate. But at the same time, I hope we don't lose sight that there's another generation of kids right now, mm-hmm. and we have to get them early intervention. And we want better for them than we had.
Mm-hmm.
And so research really needs to be able to hit those different areas. Mm-hmm. And while Autism Speaks isn't going to be able to do research on every one of those areas because there just isn't enough money out there in Autism Speaks or even in NIH and National Institute of Health, there isn't enough money. But we have to try to pick those areas that are going to be most impactful, most provide the best bang for the buck for our kids mm-hmm. and for the adults that are growing up now.
Yeah, just speaking, I know we have to go, but I know speaking of contentiousness, a big theme of this conference, which is a giant 2,300-person conference here in San Francisco, big theme is just the great diversity of the autisms and that we're really not talking about one thing. We're talking about many different conditions just that have overlapping clinical presentations, as they say. And I think that's an important thing to think in mind. There shouldn't be contentiousness. There's just difference within this big umbrella. So
that's right. Yeah. That's right. It's totally right. And as we understand these different autisms, I think it'll start to become clearer to everyone that we do need to identify different paths, different treatments, different ways that these people go through their lives. And mm-hmm. the earlier we can do that, the more likely it is that we can make sure that everybody maximizes their experience.
Yep, and that's what we want. Well, thank you so much, and thanks to Autism Speaks for all you do.
Oh, thank you.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
Hey, so that's it. Those are our three interviews. Amazing. Jill did an amazing job.
Jill is a very good interviewer.
Very good. Very competent interviewer. Very, yes. very good. I thought it was interesting that what Tom Frazier said at Autism Speaks, you know, he's the new science officer where he talks about there being so many things that divide the community, which is like, man, it sure feels like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We've talked about this at length a few times.
Yes, we have. I mean, I think that those divisions will sort of, and what he talked about is it'll end up being different paths for different people.
Right.
So we maybe need to combine resources, but he is saying, like, you know, we need different solutions for different kids. I agree. I like that. I like that he's working to translate science into treatment. You know, that's sort of interesting. It seems obvious, but there needs to be...
Everything seems obvious in hindsight, but at the time, it's not always...
mm-hmm. I also like that he said we want better for the next generation.
I agree, because sometimes we get caught up on this whole, that's how hazing starts. Like, oh, I got hazed. Well, that doesn't make it cool.
Yeah.
Well, that's what we always do. We always beat each other up.
I don't want to hear about your hazing.
We always beat each other up with sticks. That's part of going to... I went to boarding school. So it's, that's part of going to boarding school. Well, that doesn't make it nice, you ding dong.
I understand.
So that was good. What do you think about... did you have any... I thought Thomas Avino's... request for brains was interesting. I never thought of that, but yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah, of course. But I mean, it was interesting what he said about the brains begin big and then are small towards the end. I mean, what that meant was that it's constantly changing. I never thought about that. Like I always, when we always do this sort of stuff, I always think in terms of my brother. He's 33. He's a done deal.
Right.
You know, and you guys can have your different therapies and all that for your 5-year-old and 10-year-old, but it's not going to help my brother, you know.
Right.
And but that sort of makes me feel like maybe I'm wrong.
I think it was interesting too. You could have a brain that's too big. I never even thought of that.
Yes. Well, our next interview, David Amaral, Yeah, he talked about that, right?
Right, the different how sizes like, brains, yeah.
Bigger, it's like, I love what he said, how it's a bigger city.
Right.
Like a bigger brain equals a bigger city. And in that, and like, so it's like more confusing. Like New York is harder to get around than,
than,
you know,
St. John.
Yeah, than St. John, New Brunswick, where you just were.
There's two streets, two main streets.
Yeah. It's interesting.
It's very interesting. And it talks about the lack of connection between the different regions. Because I always heard autism described as the software of the brain is not working. It's all there, but it's not firing correctly. So if you can get those neurons to fire correctly, eventually it's all there.
And I wonder if that has anything to do with how in a couple episodes we were talking about how, they just sort of proved that more smart people are autistic than not.
Yeah, there's definitely a genetic link between
there's a genetic trait.
And autism.
That's, I completely misquoted. That's not anything what they said. What you said is the correct.
It's team effort.
You know what I meant.
Team effort, buddy.
You know what I meant, guys. But yeah, so you know, it just seems like it's, you know, a bigger brain. I don't know. I really like what he said about what David Amaral said about how solving the small problems first. I thought that was amazing. You know, like with gut and everything.
I agree.
Like that. And then you can solve the bigger problems.
I agree. I think with my son, that's one of the biggest problems. I really do. Like the gut. There's a book about the three minds, I think. I'm probably misquoting. So it's your mind and your head and your gut. And it talks about the alignment of your gut. Anyway, it's a whole. Yeah, the gut thing for my son is an issue. We're working on it.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's doing great. And I mean, these interviews were fantastic. And thank you so much, Jill. You are incredible as always.
Jill's killing it.
Yeah, killing it. Really killing it.
That's it, guys.
I hope you guys enjoyed it.
Yeah, I know this is a little bit different. It's a little more science-y than usual, but we're trying to mix it up. My mom loves the science. She's like, if you guys would tell less jokes and tell more, okay, cool, Mom.
Your mom's like, just give the podcast to Jill. If we could make the Jill podcast.
Oh, it's so funny.
Yeah.
But I guess some people like jokes. I'm like, yeah, Mom, some people do like jokes. That's the whole comedian angle. Some people like jokes.
We have a few new listeners. We have some new listeners, and we want to direct those new cool people to patreon.com/autastic. patreon.com/autastic. And when you go there, you can donate $1 per episode, and that really helps us keep this train moving. There are some more expenses than you'd think to do something like this.
There are.
We're not looking to make a bunch of money. Just keep on doing it. And for those of you that have donated and are signed up for that, thank you so much. You guys are the best. We love you very much.
And if you could sharing this podcast is a big thing. Tag your friends in the posts. Share it. Mm. This is we get a lot of word of mouth people that you'd be surprised are interested in this podcast. But you can share it, rate and review on iTunes. That would really appreciate it, guys. We're gonna do a quick contest. If you rate and review on iTunes, we're gonna do a quick drawing at the end of the summer for a book signed copy of my book Rice Krispies with Ketchup. Free mail too. I'll mail it to you for free anywhere in
Sweet.
The continental U.S. or Canada.
Is it a drawing or a draw?
We're going to have a drawing, right?
We're going to have a draw? Draw.
Ah, I think they're both drawing.
Right. Anyway, that was Autastic.
Is it a draw?
Thank you so
much. And if you already did leave a comment, we are going to do if you already did leave a rating review comment, we are going to do a drawing for those too, or a draw. So there'll be two books. So if you already left it, you didn't miss out. If you haven't, this is your chance. Rate and review. Find us on Facebook. Kirk Smith Comedy. Graham K. Comedy. It's a long episode. We love you guys. You can do it.
Thank you.